Accession number 30624, reel 7.
Accession number 30624, Mr. Murray Pevan, reel 7. Now, you're going to do a couple of examples of patter because, you know, it's quite interesting for people to hear it in the words of someone who actually said this to pupils then. So if you give us a couple of examples, that'd be great.
Right, well, we'll talk about instrument flying and we'll talk about descending. Now, you've been flying straight and level in cruise going from A to B, and you're almost at B now, and you've got to start descending in preparation to make a landing. So you've got a pull panel of instruments in front of you. So I'll now explain. Descents should be made with the use of engine and should always be made to a specified altitude. In other words, decide we're going to come down from 3,000 feet to 1,000 feet. So what we're trying to find out is a good airspeed to come down at, a good rate of descent to make, so that we're in total control the whole time. So we looked at our airspeed, and we control the airspeed by the use of our elevator. If we're going too fast, the elevator is brought back a fraction to raise the nose, and then the power is taken off, and then when the airspeed is correct, set the power so that you then maintain the new airspeed and you trim the aircraft accordingly. I'm now going to read the actual official notes because my memory is a little bit soft on this. The correct method, I'm now reading it. Throttle back to a suitable throttle setting. Use the elevators to bring the image and the artificial horizon into the appropriate position for an engine-assisted descent. Then check the airspeed and adjust with elevators as required. Keeping the airspeed constant with the elevators, adjust the throttle gradually until the desired rate of loss of height is obtained. Note the position of the image on the artificial horizon and concentrate on keeping it there to continue correct and steady rate of descent. Just before reaching the new altitude required, return the image to level flight position with the elevators and open the throttle to cruising power. Always, of course, at the same time, you are watching your direction indicator to see that your heading is not varying, that you're maintaining the direction that you wanted in the first place. If you wish to lower the speed before landing, then you'll be needing to use the flaps, so it's worthwhile. Let's do a little exercise whilst we're here, whereby we lower the flaps and repeat the exercise, knowing the lower position and the different attitude of the aircraft when the flaps are down as we descend with engine under controlled conditions. So the correct patter is from level flight, throttle back to a suitable throttle setting. Use the elevators to adjust the airspeed to the correct value for an engine descent, assisted descent, trim, and open, lower your flaps, and then retrim so that you're maintaining your descent at the required airspeed and the required power.
So you'd be saying all this.
All this. And the thing is this, that without doing it at the same time, it's difficult.
I understand the problems, you know.
One of the things that I did, I was quite brutal sometimes. For example, if we were doing a night cross country and it was going too easily for the pupil and I'd be sitting quietly beside him in the dark, my left hand would go down and I'd start winding some rudder trim on. And the effect of that would be make the aircraft yaw. And then I'd pull one throttle and just sit back and watch what he did. And he'd be all sorts of things. Now, I then say to him, "You're skidding, watch your ball, watch your ball, watch your ball." And as he was pushing his foot to correct the ball, I'd say, "Well, have you checked the trim?" So in other words, I'd dance him around the cockpit until gradually they become expert. And I'd finally be able to do that to them, and they'd just check this, check this, check this, check this, and get it all sorted. And then I got it right. They were then okay, should the emergency occur. So you had to be brutal as an instructor. You had to put them in difficult conditions, and you had to watch their reactions. And what you had to do was, having seen where they got it all wrong, then gently re-instruct them in the right way to do it so that they would be able to handle the emergency perfectly the next time. The other thing was this, of course, to remember that your pupils were also examined by the CFI. And if they had manifestly faults, the blame would come on my shoulders because it was my pupil. So I'm, if you like, being tested twice. Once when I'm being tested personally, and once when my pupils are being tested.
So if they failed, it would be a black mark
for you?
It would
be a black mark for me, precisely, yeah.
And did yours pass, generally?
Well, I think so.
Well, you'd have been off it, I presume.
Yeah.
Now, anything else about before you leave there? Because that was your last flight when you beat
that
up the
last
airfield.
Flight.
Last
yeah.
RAF. Yeah. Very much your
well,
last RAF.
Well, I've been back there 50 years after and beat the place up again. And met some of the guys from that unit. I'm great on sort of these anniversaries things.
So what happened next then? I mean, you
well, what happened then was
what happened then was this, that
you went to a different number of holding units, and then they sent me to drivers in school down in Wiltshire somewhere, where we just drove trucks for about 6 hours and given a driving license.
Now, what was that at Melksham?
Yeah, and then I went to Germany and stayed there for about the best part of a year driving trucks.
So tell us about that. So what was about the driving course?
Well, that wasn't too bad.
That was at Melksham?
At Melksham. That was quite easy. And then we went over to Germany.
You don't remember anything about it, then?
Nothing special, no. And then sent to Germany, and I ended up in Bonn. Bad Gothersburg.
What were you doing there?
Very little, actually. I got myself thrown out of the mess there.
Which unit were you attached to?
Well, I forget the name of the unit. It was basically a holding unit in Bonn, which is Bad Gothersburg. Then I got sent to a unit in Holland, which I quite liked, where we had a reserve transmitter, beam transmitter. A small village, doing nothing really all day long.
So you were doing that from 1945 to when?
Till May 46 when I got demobbed.
And what do you remember about your demobilisation?
I was just waiting for it to happen because I was wasting my time. Every one of us was wasting our time, but it was necessary, I suppose. It was not a very, very important, you know, period. We're all anxious to get out and get on with life.
So what was the procedure of demobilisation? You know, they've got to get you out.
Yeah, I was a warrant officer by this time. So I think I got just after I left the flying school, the school where I was instructing, I became a warrant officer. And
I'm surprised they used warrant officers as drivers.
Well, they used anybody. I know, there were dozens of them. Guys who'd been on operations were there as well. It was a weird, I mean, they got rid of everybody as quickly as they could, and you had a demob number, and the demob number was based basically on your age. So if you were young, as I was when I went in, I had a high demob number, so I didn't have any priority. So they were just using you to fill up the gaps as other people were being demobbed.
Now, did you get the suit and everything?
Oh, God, yes, that's somewhere near Liverpool. I've got a suit, ill-fitting thing.
No good.
No.
Now, we're just getting back into post-war life and also to ask you a bit about your career, because you've had a flying career that goes to this day. What were you going to do when you came out? Because you'd been working for the Air Ministry.
I'd rather not talk about it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my life because I had no business experience. And really, I made a balls of it. So.
Right. Okay, thank you very much.